Hi, I'm Rick Reynolds, and you're listening to A Fair Recovery Radio, Radio to the Power of God. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, sponsors, or advertisers of this station. Due to the sensitive nature of the topics discussed on this program, it is not suitable for children, so we strongly advise that children not be within listening range of this program. Also, please be advised that while we are counselors, what we're doing here tonight is not counseling, and if you have a need, we strongly advise that you seek professional help. The Affair Recovery Center is a community of counseling professionals and couples who have experienced the abundant blessing of reconciliation and renewal. We are dedicated to the restoration of marriages crippled by infidelity. Our mission is to offer hope, support, and recovery for couples and individuals who have suffered the pain as a result of infidelity, betrayal, or sexual addiction. We truly believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
Hi, welcome to Affair Recovery Radio tonight, and I'm here with my lovely bride, Stephanie, who has put up with me for over 30 years in spite of my own infidelity. And at Affair Recovery Radio, we actually talk about how you can still be together after 30 years when there's been infidelity. And since over 40% of couples experience infidelity, we figured that that would probably be a really good topic to talk about. And at the Affair Recovery Center, Leslie and John and Wayne and Karen and all of us work really hard at helping couples all day long and just trying to figure out, how do we move beyond infidelity? How do we heal? How do we trust? How do we begin to experience the marriages we've always wanted? And tonight we're actually going to talk about a really interesting topic. And it's a topic called limerence. And limerence is that piece when it's about falling in love. It's about infatuation. So I know that when I first met Stephanie, I actually was infatuated with her. There was a limerence, and we're going to talk about what that is. And there's nothing wrong with limerence. In fact, God actually created limerence. But the problem with limerence occurs whenever you're married, and suddenly that same sort of infatuation begins with somebody that you're not married to. And so the problem gets to be, how in the world do you begin to move beyond that? Now, we would love for people to call in tonight, and you can call here at area code 512-637-9673. That's 512-637-9673. Or, of course, you can do 512-367-WORD, but that would also be 9673. So 9673 is a long time from now, so you can not worry about that. But anyway, 637-9673. I keep saying that because I really would like some of you guys to call in and talk about your crushes. Talk about infatuation, especially if you in marriage have had that unfortunate occurrence where you've really developed a strong crush on somebody that is not your mate. And again, you know, what do you do with that when that occurs? And that's really the topic that we're going to be talking on tonight. So again, please call in and we will protect your identity. But we would love for you to talk just about your experiences and maybe how you moved beyond it. And I think Stephanie actually has kind of an interesting definition.
I do. First, I wanted to spell limerence because I had a hard time, before I saw it in print, I had a hard time understanding the word. It's L-I-M-E-R-A-N-C-E, and it's limerence. And this is a description out of a book that it really helped me in understanding it. You think, I want you forever, now, yesterday, and always. Above all, I want you to want me. No matter where I am or what I am doing, I am not safe from your spell. At any moment, the image of your face smiling at me, of your voice telling me you care, or of your hand in mine may suddenly fill my consciousness, rudely pushing out all else. The expression, thinking of you, fails to convey either the quality or quantity of this unwilled mental activity. Obsessed comes closer, but leaves out the aching. A child is obsessed on Christmas Eve, but it's a happy prepossession, full of excitement, curiosity, and expectation. This prepossession is an emotional roller coaster that carries me from the peak of ecstasy to the depths of despair and back again. I bear the thought of other topics when I must, but prolonged concentration on any other subject is difficult to tolerate. I must admit that it has happened on occasion that some entertainment or distraction overwhelmed thought of you, and I was suddenly freed from my pain and for an instant viewed you from a new perspective. On those occasions, I glimpsed reality usually closed from my view. I don't seek distractions. I'm too afraid that they won't distract after all, and I'll be imprisoned elsewhere. I'll be imprisoned somewhere saying polite nothings while I long to give myself up to desiring you with all my passion. Everything reminds me of you. I try to read, but four times on a single page, some word begins the lightning chain of associations that summons my mind away from my work, and I must struggle to return my attention to the task at hand. Often I give up easily, leave my desk, and throw myself down on my bed where my body lies still while my imagination constructs long and involved and plausible reasons to believe that you love me. Or I remember. After the weekend in Vermont, my brain replayed each moment, over and over. You said you loved me at dusk by the waterfall. 10,000 reverberations of the scene sprinkled my succeeding days with happiness. You remember the state, do you? It's what this book is all about. This was very helpful to me in trying to understand a little bit about the infatuation, the crush, so to speak. And one of the things you told me, Rick, is that every relationship goes through this. So I felt that about you, but we ended up married. So in thinking about that happening to someone who is already married, is that when those doubts of I married the wrong person creep in? Because they may have been married long enough that they're no longer feeling that for their mate, but yet this new and exciting person comes on the scene and they're feeling that for them. And I could see where that could be, where Satan could certainly plant that thought in your mind that, oh, well, I must have married the wrong person because now this person's come along that makes me feel excited and young and renews all those feelings that you once had with your mate. And why does that not last in your marriage? I mean, is there a reason? And that's not to say that I don't love you, but I don't feel like I did when I first married you or when I first met you. So help me with that.
Well, it's interesting with limerence. And I think when people are having affairs, this is one of the biggest problems. They think that they found ultimately their soulmate and they found the person that will make them happy. However, research shows that limerence will last for only 2 to 3 years, four at the max. And so even though you've got this absolutely incredible feeling about this wonderful person, or so you think a wonderful person, it actually will not last. But there's this incredible drug that is propelling you toward this person, and really you're kind of rushing headlong into oblivion.
Yeah, but 2 or 3 or 4 years, I mean, that's long enough for me to divorce my spouse and marry this person that I'm infatuated with.
Right. And that's the problem with limerence. You know, one of the characteristics of limerence are infatuation. I mean, I think both of those things are really good terms. And some of you that may be listening tonight may actually be really in love with somebody else besides your mate. I mean, that's a strong possibility. So if that happens, you think, well, I've got something far better with this other person than I ultimately have with my mate. However, see if any of these characteristics, which are very true of infatuation, are true of your current situation. One of the things that happens with infatuation is what we call intrusive thinking. I remember when, you know, I began, you know, having my affair, the problem was I could not stop thinking about the other person.
That's kind of like what I just read. Mm-hmm. I mean, the person couldn't even work. They couldn't get through a page of a book because they kept having those thoughts that intruded.
Right. And so when I'm talking to somebody who's in love with someone else, in fact, I actually talked with somebody this past week. I had a new client, and he's just absolutely torn because he's got a wife. He's got this incredible relationship with this person that he just can't quit thinking of. He thinks about – I said, well, let me guess. You think of her at least 80% of the day. And he said, well, how did you know? And I said, and let me guess. She's the first thing you think of when you wake up in the morning. She's the last thing you think of when you go to bed at night. Every time there's a song, you think about what she would think about that. Every time your wife says something, you think, well, so-and-so would have said such-and-such about that. And so all day long, what's happening is you're just thinking about the other person, and you're even having trouble, I told him, you know, concentrating at work and being able to do anything at work because you can't stop thinking about her.
Well, and is there also always this constant comparison?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And it, and that's that intrusive thought that's happening. And what's happening is you think about that, you know, person you're infatuated with, or what we would call the limerent object, they give you such incredible joy. So, you know, it just is a no-brainer. Why wouldn't you want to be with this person that's giving you such joy at this point, and not, you know, and not leave your mate, which right now gives you no joy? In fact, your mate is kind of your biggest, you know, pain, because they're the thing that's in between you and ultimately having what you believe will make you completely happy. And so those intrusive thoughts, you know, get going,
and they kill you there. I want to ask, isn't it enough to know that it's wrong? I mean, I would say, okay, you know, I have no biblical reason to divorce my husband. I mean, he's been a good husband. He's provided for me. He's been faithful. Why would I pursue that relationship knowing that it's not right? I guess I'm thinking, what is going to give me enough motivation not to pursue that relationship?
Well, it's really difficult. Part of it is really beginning to understand what is limerence, because in reality, there is such misery not getting to be with that other person that you're so infatuated with. I don't care what your mate's done for you. At that point, the inability to be with that other person just seems almost unimaginable. It is so painful. And literally, that sort of infatuation that occurs in an affair, in an entangled relationship, can be that strong. Now, I will tell you clearly, it is not love by any means.
How do I know it's not love, though? Because what I've heard people say is, well, I guess I didn't really love the person I'm married to. We've seen this happen personally. I didn't really love my wife. I thought I was in love with her, but I really wasn't, because now I know I love this other person.
Well, I mean, there's something crazy when all you can do is think about, you know, a person 80% of the day. You've got to begin to go, is there something beyond just this person? You know, and really what's happening is there is a profound chemical reaction that begins to happen in a limerent relationship. One of the other characteristics of limerence, which I think is really dangerous, is a concept called crystallization. And crystallization, in contrast to idealization, they're very, very different. Crystallization, in crystallization, you can actually – the person in love, or quote, in that infatuation – can see the negative characteristics in their, you know, partner, their fair partner. The only problem is they actually don't weight those negative characteristics. They actually kind of see them as cute or endearing or unique. And so they write them off thinking, you know, they're not a big deal. Now, idealization, which infatuation is not about idealization, is incapable of actually seeing the negatives. Almost everybody I know that gets into that entangled relationship where they think they've fallen in love, what they've really done is fallen in limerence, at that point, they really may see the negatives, but there's no way they can respond to those negatives.
So they just kind of try to reframe them in, like you said, something cute.
Well, they so badly have to have that limerent object, just like a heroin addict so badly has to have the heroin just to feel normal. Mm-hmm. Then ultimately they just kind of ignore what the negatives are.
And
they can see them, but they don't weight them. You know, I think about, you know, like in my affair, one of the things that I could have told you very clearly what the negatives were with the person I was having the affair with. I could tell you that she had an eating disorder. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you also that, you know, treating eating disorders is not, you know, they are very, very difficult. They're hard on the person. They're hard on the marriage. And why in the world, you know, I would think at that moment that being married to somebody with a serious eating disorder was a good idea. I mean, in hindsight, when I'm not in that infatuation, I go, egads, I must have been crazy. Why would I want to take on a serious eating disorder? But, you know, it actually seemed like a wonderful idea
at the time.
And I have to tell you, you know, and so they can't keep their checkbook or, you know, so they've had multiple affairs. I'm sure I'm the solution to their problem and I'll ultimately make them happy. Or so they've got, I mean, whatever the problem is, it just doesn't matter. So you're incapable, and all you can see are the really good characteristics that make you think they're the perfect object. And yet, they're not. Nobody on the face of this planet, alive today on this planet, is the perfect person. In fact, probably every person is just as capable of making you just as miserable. You know, we always say, my mate is never my problem. My mate just begins to reveal the problem in me. And all you're doing is kind of trading one problem for another. I think I've told this on the program before, but it reminds me of the old joke where the sergeant comes into the barracks and says, "Hey, guys, I've got some really good news and I've got some really bad news." And everybody said, "Well, what's the good news?" And he says, "Everybody's going to get new underwear." And they said, "Well, then what's the bad news?" And he said, "Well, you trade with him, you trade with him, you trade with him, you trade with him." Well, you know, at that point, that's all that's happening. And you're really not putting yourself into a better situation, even though at the moment, because of that limerence and because of that incredible, the strength of that emotion and those intrusive thoughts, where all you can think about is that person 85% of the day, then and you can't be happy unless you're with them, then suddenly, you know, objectivity is basically destroyed.
I think you want to tell some more symptoms.
I want to tell some more symptoms?
You're looking like you do. Other than the intrusive thoughts and the crystallization. But one thing I was thinking is, are there some, at some points in your life or at some points in time that you are more vulnerable to limerence than at other times?
Oh, I think maybe, you know, limerence can happen. I don't know that you're necessarily more vulnerable. I guess if things aren't going well in your marriage and you're kind of, you know, looking around thinking if maybe there's a situation out there that might make you happier than your current situation, then just entertaining that thought and seeing someone else and kind of having your eyes open and scanning the horizon, I think does have the possibility of you just may be more likely of seeing somebody that suddenly triggers that response where the crystallization begins. You know, kind of paramount to the whole limerence thing in the one of the other characteristics, it's always about hope and uncertainty. You know, it's like if the limerent object, if that person you've got that crush on gives you just the slightest positive response, then what you do is you replay that fragment in your head, you know, days on end, you know, just kind of going, oh, my goodness, you know, because you can't even – because it's – have you ever done that? You know, when you've got that crush, when you've got that infatuation, when they do one thing and you just play it over and over and over, it's what you – part of that – 80% of your thought life that's, you know, going on. On the other hand, if you're rebuffed by that other person and if they sit there somehow and say, well, this may not be a good idea for me, and you feel that negative thing, then suddenly you just go to this incredible despair and you kind of become very listless. You brood. And you just sit there now, instead of having positive emotions as you think about this other person, now all you've got are these incredible, you know, these grief emotions and this loss, and you can't believe, you know, and so you're going all the time back and forth. She loves me. She loves me not. She loves me. She loves me not. You know, she really wants to be with me. And any little thing, you know, I call and she picks up on the third call. Well, that must mean she's interested in me. I mean, we're looking for such small little clues that maybe they have feelings for me just because, you know, they say hi to me, you know. And again, because of crystallization, I can't even be objective. And it is purely emotional. It has nothing to do with reason. It has nothing to do with the other person really being a better choice. It really has nothing to do with love at all. But it has everything to do with a profound chemical reaction, dealing a lot with almost amphetamine types of responses and adrenaline that drive me toward that person and just keep me absolutely, you know, obsessed with them.
Well, I know some of the information that I read said that the sexual aspect of it is not actually the main aspect of limerence.
Right. The whole sexual thing, I mean, sex may actually occur in the limerent relationship, but that's not what it's about at all. It's really about, you know, being able to possess this person that you think ultimately is going to make you absolutely, you know, it's going to fulfill your life.
Well, but also they said that a sexual attraction would have to be a part of it before it would be considered limerence, but that would not be the focus of it.
Right, right. And so you wouldn't want, you know, you can't. If you're thinking, well, I don't really want to have sex with them, you know, then that doesn't mean that it's not limerence. You know, what makes the limerence is the fact that you can't – the intrusive thought, the fact that you can't quit thinking about this person. Okay, you're looking puzzled.
Well, that doesn't agree with the information with what I was reading, because what I was reading said that there had to be at least a sexual attraction for there to be limerence. That's not what you said. You said that just because there was no sexual attraction didn't mean that it wasn't limerence.
Okay. Well, I mean, just because you're not having sex.
Right, having sex.
And that's
sex.
Not
okay.
That's not the main piece of that relationship.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I understood that. There was something else that I've heard you say, too, in teaching groups before. And I read it in another one of the books that I was reading about limerence, and that was that when there is a when there's something that's keeping you from being together, I forgot how you described that. If there's something that's keeping you from being together, then that creates even more of a tension, even more of a desire to be together. And that plays a big part in limerence, from what I read. You know, you were talking about Romeo and Juliet, because their families did not want them to be together. They even so much more wanted to be together.
Right. So if for the limerent object, and that's where you get back into the fear and uncertainty.
Oh, okay.
You know, where, you know, are we going to get to be together? Are we not going to get to be together? And the fear that you'll never get to be with that person, just again, what it does is it still is that limerent response, that chemical response. It's just that the feelings of that response are really more about the longing and the ache and the agony, versus the ecstasy, over the fact that this other person may actually care about me. But, you know, what I can't stress strong enough in any limerent response, first off, limerent responses are not God. They're not God-ordained, nor are they God-produced, nor is it a sign from heaven. Limerent reactions are a chemical reaction that occurs. Now, it is a God-created system that he put into place to help us, to help put us together with our mate. However, to think that that same system can't get triggered even after marriage mm-hmm. is naive. Mm-hmm. Of course it can be triggered. And, you know, since we're almost halfway through the hour, again, our telephone number here is area code 512-637-9673. And, again, I would love somebody to call in tonight.
Just give us your thoughts on limerence, whether you've had any experience with it or not. Maybe you've had a friend who has had some experience with it, and they've talked to you a lot about it. We'd love to hear, you know, just what kind of advice you gave them, or what path they took, you know, what it looked like for them.
And I think, again, area code 512-637-9673. And maybe the question we get into, just because you get trapped in a chemical reaction that we call limerence, the question is, how do you stop that? Because, I mean, when you've only got 15% of your brain left and intrusive thoughts are occurring 85%
of the time. One thing I read said 100% of the time. He thought about this woman. I was like, how did he hold down a job?
Well, you know, it really gets to be, for the poor person that's going through it, you know, just an absolutely awful experience at some point, especially if the last thing they want to do is go there because of their own convictions. You know, they can sit there, they, you know, rationally and say, wow, you know, I don't want to do this. On the other hand, when you're compelled, just like a heroin addict or an alcoholic 85% of the time, it's tough. Blaise Pascal, who I love, Blaise Pascal, a philosopher, he writes this. He says, the heart has its reasons, which reason knows nothing of. And again, I think when the heart has its reasons, you know, again, it is a God-created, God-ordained system that he put in us, a chemical reaction piece that happens. It's just that, you know, having that mating system get kicked off, where suddenly we want to be with somebody who is not our mate, doesn't mean that that person is going to be the better person for us. In fact, it doesn't mean anything of the sort.
Well, I know that Satan delights in taking the truth of God and twisting it. And so, because God set this in motion as something that is important in marriages, Satan's delight is to take that and twist it. So,
right. So, you know, how do you get out of a limerent relationship? How do you break that? When you're married and you really want to be faithful to God, you know, first off, you know, I believe personally that God is more than worth our pursuit, that people have a funny way of ultimately disappointing us. And the problem, I guess maybe one of the most unpopular things that I talk about at times is that to love someone really means that you have to suffer to be with them. That love isn't just a good feeling. And when love just becomes a good feeling, there's probably something a bit unrealistic. I mean, I look at what love cost Jesus, and love cost Jesus a whole lot of suffering.
You mean love is not always convenient?
Love inconvenient in the very least. So if you've got the limerent object, one of the things you need to begin to do is to get some detachment from them. And, you know, when I have someone that's actually gotten into a strong attraction with someone, the first thing I do is say, okay, we need to break off that relationship. We need to do whatever we can to stop having contact. Because it's like there's this 8-lane highway that's been etched in your brain that continually takes you down this path, you know? And if you can quit seeing that person and go longer and longer and longer periods of time without thinking of that person, eventually you'll begin to get your mind back, but you'll also begin to slow that chemical reaction that's triggering that entire limerent mating sort of response
right. That's
happened to you. And again, it's totally biochemical. So I recommend to people, I say, okay, you need at the very least to agree with me to do something like a 90-day no contact, not see, not talk, not write, not anything type of, kind of a fast from this person. Mm-hmm. Because what will happen over that period of 90 days, and I even recommend, and this may sound really crazy, but I recommend when people are doing their 90-day fast from this other person that they actually get on antidepressants.
Why?
Well, because the obsessive...
Maybe they're not depressed.
They're going to be. Because once they start trying to break this thing off, that it is so difficult not to be with their limerent object. And so there's this profound sadness. But more than that, antidepressants really help a lot with obsessive compulsive disorder. And so what they found is if you'll use an antidepressant... Now, I want to say I am not a doctor, so let's be clear here. However, I know several psychiatrists who agree with me on this, and a psychiatrist actually taught me about this, so this is not something I came up with on my own. But by having, during that 90-day period, by getting on an antidepressant so that you begin to kind of replenish some of the neurotransmitters so you can actually be more objective and you can begin to control the obsessive-compulsive disorder, it goes a very, very, very long way to beginning to help you become both rational, reasonable, and to help you begin to stop thinking about the other person. In that 90-day period, I also find it to be really helpful to set aside times when you really do begin to honestly process your feelings as well as the reality of that limerent object, of that other person.
What do you mean?
Well, like if I've got somebody who has a terrible crush, so to speak, on someone, and they can't quit thinking about them, so we'll set out to do 90 days. Now, again, remember that there are several things that can make this really, really difficult. One, there is a possibility that your limerent object is just as obsessed as you are about you. And
I was going to say, this is not always unrequited.
That's right. And so let's say I've got somebody who's got a crush back at me. I've never had a bottle of beer, for instance, pick up a telephone and call me or send me an email. I mean, the nice thing for the poor alcoholic is at least the beer or the alcohol, they're not coming after him, you know, full guns or full force. The limerent object, you know, if they've got that same feeling, they may not be real interested in that 90 days, but because they're still got the intrusive thoughts and they're still thinking about the other person.
So they may continue to pursue you.
Yeah. They can still be thinking about it 80-90% of the day. So
isn't that when you, like, tell your spouse?
Well, yeah. That certainly, you know, at this point, typically the word is out. The spouse knows. And so, you have to set up some boundaries. Now, in setting it up with the limerent object, one of the things I suggest, especially if this person has been in going back and forth between their mate and, you know, their affair partner.
So they're actually having an affair?
Yeah, let's say.
Yeah. Well, a limerence would be an emotional affair anyway.
Right. And let's say they're actually having an affair.
Sexual affair.
Sexual affair or non-sexual affair.
Okay. Sexual or emotional.
Yeah, okay. Sexual or emotional, where they're really just kind of looking to that person. It's who they think about. It's who they long for. It's who they ache for all the time. What we do is we talk about that person. We begin to look realistically at what the characteristics are of that person. We begin to look realistically at their marriage and what are the advantages, what are the disadvantages, ultimately beginning to try to gain objectivity. We try to listen very carefully, you know, what is God telling you one way or the other? Because, you know, a marriage that's been together even for a year, 2 years, 5 years, certainly deserves 90 days. To begin to process and look and to be honest and you know, to admit to your mate what's going on, but then to cut off that contact. And I'll tell you, for the person that's really in the limerent relationship, it is kind of painful to be in that dance where you can't quit thinking about the other person. And where they're the first thing you think of and the last thing you think of at night, you know? I mean, you kind of want to get your thoughts back. And oftentimes, even after the person decides that they don't want to be with their affair partner or that limerent object, and they recognize that it's not a good choice, and they know what God's telling them, and they know the path they're going to take, but they still have those intrusive thoughts all the time. And it often can take 6 months, it can take 9 months before ultimately the feelings for that limerent object begin to go away. Even if after that 90 days, they're very clear about the path they need to take and the path they want to take, they still don't have their mind back. And so, you know, for that person to kind of, I guess, close it off in their own mind, they ultimately have to kind of write their own little letter of termination, their own reasons that they can look back and remind themselves up over and over again as to why they don't want to be with this person and why this isn't really a good deal, because the emotions so override reason. You know, they've got to come up with what in the world would keep me from, or why am I making this decision? Because it's a painful decision to make not to be with that person. So again, you can call us at 637-9673. I still want somebody to tell a story of, you know, maybe having a crush on somebody. All of us remember our first puppy love. Maybe our first infatuation. I mean, I think every person that's kind of normal has gone through something like this. I remember my first crush on Gail when I was in ninth grade. And, you know, I was obsessed with Gail. And I think Gail was obsessed with me. But I also remember when I was rebuffed by Gail, and then that uncertainty, and was I ever going to have what was, you know, going to ultimately make me happy, and my heart was broken, and once she hurt me, you know, and rejected me, I didn't start thinking of Gail less at that point. It wasn't like this thing was over at that point. I began thinking about Gail more at that point.
Well, didn't you start trying to find ways that you could win her back?
Absolutely. Because I couldn't conceive life, me ever getting to be happy if I didn't get to be with Gail. And, you know, we can look back, and here's a little, you know, 15-year-old boy who thinks that he has found absolutely the love of his life. In retrospect, I remember when I was like a freshman in college, I came across an old friend of mine, and I still had this kind of ache for Gail. And I was talking to my friend, and I said, yeah, you know, you remember when I was dating Gail, you know, because I used to drive by, anybody ever did this thing where you used to drive by your old girlfriend's house, and you see if they're still there, and you can see their cars. It's so sick.
One time my boyfriend drove by my house, and I was brushing my teeth in the big window in the front of my house. I just waved at him.
That was sexy, I bet.
Yeah.
But I told my friend, I said, you remember I was dating Gail? And he said, yeah, and you know, dude, she really wasn't even good looking. And I said, that's not true.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, he said, you never did date Gail.
No. He told me she was ugly. And you know, actually, honey, I said, that's not true.
I've seen her picture. She's ugly.
She is ugly. And so I pulled out this picture of Gail, and I thought, well, I'll be dadgum. She is ugly. And I thought, how did I not see the fact that she's ugly? You know, what was wrong with me? But that's the problem, isn't it, with limerence? You know, we're not going to be objective. They can be too bag ugly, and you're still going to be absolutely smitten, thinking about them 80% of the day, thinking you can't live if you can't be with them. So we talked about you do the 90-day no contact. That's really probably one of the most important things.
Well, what if it's somebody you work with?
Honestly, I think if it's somebody you work with, you probably need to seriously consider getting another job. You try to work as hard as you can at avoiding any type of contact with them, to the best of your ability, not to do that.
Right.
You know, and we've got somebody who's willing to talk about limerence with us. We've got Karen. Hello, Karen.
Hi there. I was just heard a little bit of your program, and I was wondering about something that I just went through recently. I had met someone at a party, you know, 6 months ago, and kind of put that out of my mind. But then someone said to me not too long ago, well, how about so-and-so? That'd be great for you. And I thought, So it kind of put it back into my mind. And then I thought, well, did he say something? So then I started thinking about him more, and then I built him up to this perfect guy, of course. And he was really just kind of in my thoughts all the time. And, you know, so I prayed that God would give us an opportunity to meet again and get to know each other and all that. God's will, of course. And I just found out a couple of days ago at another party, someone asked me if I knew him. And I said, why do you ask? And he said, well, he's having a really tough time. He's living in his car. And I just thought, thank you, Lord, you know, that you didn't bring that along. But here I spent all this energy and time dreaming up this perfect man for me. And so, I mean, what's this all about that, you know, I do this?
Well, and it's not that you're unusual. Again, it is a God-ordained, you know, biological system that's in every one of us, and it's about mating. And my dad actually, Karen, had a great way of describing it. He said, it's that initial reaction is the super glue that holds you together until real love kicks in. And but the problem is that that super glue, you know, like I've glued my fingers together with super glue, right?
Yeah.
And that's really not what I intended to get glued to. And I think that that reaction, as you said, you can begin to build that up in your head, and suddenly that system gets kicked off, and you don't. It really isn't a matter anymore of whether it's a decent person or not. It's just a matter of I can't stop thinking about them, and,
yeah,
and now my heart has gone toward them, and I don't know how, yeah, to get back away from them.
Yeah.
Karen, since you found out this information about him, are you a little bit more able to control your thoughts about him?
Oh, he doesn't have a second thought, really.
Good.
Yeah, I was just thanking God that you know, here he was protecting me from anything,
yes,
that I didn't know he was protecting me during that time.
Absolutely.
I was thinking, you know, why aren't you bringing him? And
uh-huh.
He was protecting me.
I guess that's a good reason to get to know somebody before you really let your feelings kind of,
yeah,
go crazy, huh?
Yeah, but I think it's because this other person, you know, I thought, oh, he must have said something.
Yes.
You know, I imagined, you know,
yes,
why would she say that? I,
yes,
didn't want to ask her and put her on the spot. But
yeah, we're kind of vulnerable. When we find out that someone might be a little bit interested in us, it does, mm-hmm, kind of get us a little bit curious, and it kind of piques our interest in them too.
Right.
I agree.
Yeah. But, you know, it's often, I think, that this happens anyway, because it's not just that one time. I mean, this has happened before, and I've heard other girlfriends talk about it too. They meet someone, they hit it off. So the girl, the next thing she's picturing is the wedding dress.
Yeah.
And how many kids. And so why, I mean, it's almost like this uncontrollable thing that takes us into this future that doesn't exist.
Right. But it's not almost like this uncontrollable thing. It is actually an uncontrollable,
yeah,
thing. It's not imaginary. It's quite real. And the sad thing is, when it happens in a marriage, it's just as powerful as when it happens outside of a marriage.
Yeah, that's a scary thing.
I see. Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that just like this guy wasn't going to be really a great choice for you. Typically, in fact, only about 99.99999% of the time, somebody's affair partner really isn't a great choice for them either. So, and that's not where God is taking them. It's not, you know, God doesn't always give us the easiest path anyway, but still.
Right.
You know, we just have to remember that it's just a feeling and it's not a reality, that our reality is God.
Mm-hmm.
And just because the feeling's there doesn't mean that we have to follow the feeling, that God can set us free from that feeling again.
That's right.
And set
that's
us
right.
free and get us back on path.
That's right.
Yes. Okay. Thank you so much.
Karen, thanks for calling
in. We really appreciate it, Karen.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So, I'm talking all the time, Steph. You talk for a second.
Well, I just feel like I'm learning so much about this. And I think they should be teaching this in school, because I think kids go through it a lot, you know, a whole lot, as you're young and you have those first crushes. And, you talk about the intrusive thoughts. I just remember, you know, being so distraught, it would be hard to study, and now to be able to identify those things. So I really liked it when you talked about the some of the kind of symptoms of limerence, and one of them that I found, it kind of gave that a description to what I was talking about when I mentioned Romeo and Juliet, and the fact that there was some there was kind of a roadblock in the relationship, and they call it intensification through adversity. So if there's something that if there's adversity going on in the relationship, then that usually intensifies it.
Right, and that's really dangerous with an affair situation.
Absolutely.
Because the fact that you can't get together.
Oh, there's always going to be adversity.
That adversity actually drives you closer. Some other things you can do to break a limerent relationship, I really think, is you've got to deal with the intrusive thought. And we've talked about intrusive thought on Affair Recovery Radio before. If you go back to our archives, if you go to affairrecovery.com, you'll get some of our stuff on how to deal with intrusive thoughts. Scripture memorization, interestingly enough, is a great way. So what you want to do is you want to try to quit thinking about this person. And one of the things I did to break my thought process with to stop my thought process with the other person, my affair partner, was I memorized things like the Sermon on the Mount. And every time a thought of her would come to my head, I'd start quoting Matthew 5, 6, and 7. Or I'd quote Psalm 51. Or I'd quote multiple things. And that ultimately allowed me to begin to get free. Intentionally coming up with plans to break that intrusive thought's important. Now, I think we've got Kathy on the line. Hey, Kathy.
Hey, Rick. Just a really quick question. This limerick, right?
Yes, limerence.
Okay. Can it happen with sex addiction?
Limerence and sex addiction typically are a little different. It could. I mean, I think that in kind of my situation, I certainly had sexual addiction, and then I turned back around and get in this entangled relationship, which was very much a limerent relationship. So, yeah, it can happen in sexual addiction, even though sexual addiction isn't, for men, typically based on the limerent relationship. Now, with women, oftentimes they're very addicted to this whole falling in love and infatuation. And so when you get a relationship addict going, that limerent relationship is what they're looking for.
Okay, so if you had a sex addict who was involved for 9 years with one other person, would you say there was any of that? Would there be any of that involved? You know, if that took that long?
No, it would never last that long.
No.
Typically, if you've got somebody involved with somebody for that length of time, that's not about a limerent relationship. There may have been something on the front end of a relationship, may or may not have been. When that initial kind of how it got going, but the limerence, that infatuation does wear off over time. So there's no way it would last 9 years.
Okay, well, I just wanted to ask that quick question because you got us in a debate.
I hope I didn't get you into trouble here.
No, you didn't. We were sitting here debating it. And
okay.
I said, I'm just going to call Rick and ask him.
Fair enough.
Thank you, guys.
Okay,
thank you, Kathy.
Bye-bye. Bye. Yeah, I mean, you keep hearing me say this, try to break the thought. Get the idea. You don't want to enter a relationship, especially if you're married, that is purely emotional, kind of emotionally driven in this limerence. I mean, you need to have your wits about you. You don't even need to have the affair in the first place. You need to be going for what God tells you and not, just because you've got feelings, just because it feels good, doesn't mean that you need to somehow give that thing airtime and go that direction.
Right. In life, we don't always act. We don't always act on every feeling that comes along.
Well, we don't need to.
Right.
It's scary when we do begin to act on every one of those feelings that ultimately comes along.
You have any other things to add about how to control that, the limerent relationship, what to do about it, Rick?
Well, I think that being honest about it with one's mate is really helpful. Mm-hmm. If you can bring it to light, I think when Scripture says, if we walk in the light as He is in the light, we'll have fellowship with one another, and the blood of Jesus, His Son, will purify us from all sin. I think that that often begins to kind of break that spell a little bit when it gets out to the light and you begin to watch your mate, and as the two of you begin to deal with it, blank. Dan Allender says, the parts of the story that remain untold are the places where the devil has a stronghold. And when I can begin to expose that limerent relationship, I actually take away, I think, some of the power of that.
Do you think it's also good for the spouse who is struggling with that situation to make very intentional efforts to work on the relationship with their spouse?
Right. I think that and I think maybe for the spouse where the person has gotten trapped in that limerent relationship, hopefully there's going to be able to be a little bit of understanding, especially if that person can say, look, I don't want this. I don't know why this is happening to me, but the fact of the matter is I am struggling with this thing, and I need you to pray for me. We need to talk about it. I need assurance. I need to know that you're there for me. Are you there?
Yeah, and let's work on reconnecting.
That's right, and let's work on our connection. And eventually, I think if you can build back towards your mate, then that also really helps break that off. Now, we get really scared because we think, man, if I tell my mate I've got a crush on somebody, this chemical reaction that's driving me crazy, then my mate's going to go, you know, south, or they're going to go thermonuclear on me. But in reality, if I'm willing to share with you that I'm struggling with something, hopefully you understand my loyalty is with you. My loyalty is not with the other person. The fact that I'll expose it and throw my feelings under the bus, so to speak, are the things that really, you know, move my loyalty back toward you and away from that limerent object, and well, I think set me free.
And I've heard you say in the short term there might be conflict, but in the long term there'll be intimacy.
Right. And the other thing I think we do to break the limerent relationship oftentimes is just to pray against just almost that soul tie that mm-hmm. is occurring with that other person. And it's not so much about trying to figure out whether or not my mate is better than limerent object. Remember, that is a no-win situation, because a limerent object, since you can't be objective and there's the crystallization, you're always going to choose a limerent object.
Right.
At least a limerent object is always going to make you feel better than your mate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, you've got to play the third option when you're dealing with a limerent object, and that's choosing God. That's mm-hmm. not choosing between a mate and a limerent object.
Mm-hmm.
It's just saying, you know what, Lord, I know that neither one of these people ultimately is going to make me happy, that, you know, the fullness of my joy comes from you. And so I choose you, and that's the third option.
Well, and also I think this is a great time for someone to be relying on an accountability partner or an accountability group who can think rationally and can say, hey, man, you're out of your mind. You're crazy.
Right.
And pray for you and that hedge of protection around you.
And I know we're getting kind of close to the end of time, so I wanted to say just a couple of things here very quickly. The EMS that's coming up this next weekend is definitely sold out. Who knows? We may have even overbooked. Who knows? So because of that, I mean, actually, we've got many other couples that have been trying to get into this particular EMS that can't even get in. So we are doing we're going to open up another EMS in September. That will be announced tomorrow as to what the official dates will be for the September EMS. So if you were incapable, if you're unable to get in to this EMS, we are terribly sorry. We can't take more than 10 couples. So, but if you go to the website tomorrow at affairrecovery.com, we should have the new times posted, I hope, after lunch tomorrow.
For the September EMS.
For the September EMS.
Yes.
Harboring Hope is still coming. Hang on. And next week, I hope, and I don't know this for certain yet, but Wayne is going to be talking about when a married couple, heterosexual couple, when one of the mates has a homosexual affair, and how do you overcome that homosexual affair in a heterosexual marriage? So with that, I hope that you guys have a blessed week. And we look forward to talking to you next week. Be praying for the EMS and the couples coming in this next weekend. God bless.